Into the final moments, Alex Payne trying to keep this side going forward. Haskell takes it on now with just relentless chat, largely about himself. And there's Tindall to add the finishing touch of glamour and World Cup winning stories and a slightly sideways nose. That is how you podcast. A dominant display by the good, the bad and the rugby.
Hello, Dream Team. We're back doing what we do best. Welcome along once again to the good, the bad, and the rugby. The Lord is alongside in your woolies.
Hello.
Fresh, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's cold out there, peeps.
Stay safe, stay classy.
And just when we thought we were going to have a nice, we'd earmark this as a nice, relaxing, fun pod.
Maybe a little Fancy 15, maybe a couple of tour stories, a couple of gags.
A fun guest.
A cup of tea. Instead... Instead, this week, as we said, we thought we'd do something quite fun and quite relaxing. We had a couple of agenda setters recently, what with Eddie going, of course, and we've had a State of the Game with Bill Sweeney and Simon Massey-Taylor. And actually last week we had a really juicy show all around Where is Europe Going? We thought we'd kick back, put our feet up and put the kettle on. But last Thursday, well done, the RFU dropped a bomb and then they dropped the tackle height. And then, well, I think all hell has broken loose in the ensuing days. A couple of stats for you, because the legal tackle height will move from the shoulder line to the waistline from July the 1st, and the game has gone into meltdown. So at the time of going to print... the community game. Yes, you're absolutely right. At the time of going to print, nearly 70,000 people have signed a petition saying, don't do it. I've just gone to check the Telegraph's online poll saying, should we lower the tackle height? 1,200 people have voted. 70% have said, no, don't do it. And actually, when you were away, we spoke to Bill Sweeney. He said, if you're tracking about 70-30 positive, you're doing all right. And unfortunately for Bill right now, it's 70-30 negative as far as the decisions that the RFU have put forward.
I think that goes for all in.
That goes for all in.
You just got to stay the course.
I think it's fair to say that we thought Eddie Jones was polarizing in terms of opinion. Right now, we've got two very, very noisy camps, which makes this a lively show to do. Shall we put a little bit of nuance onto what we're going to do over the course of the next hour or so? So on the face of it, completely understand a lot of the reaction of grassroots players who are screaming and shouting about how preposterous this is. There are a lot of very loud voices in the media. There are a lot of people saying how idiotic the decision is. But the question at the heart of this has been posed by Ross Tucker, who we actually asked to come on the show. I think he's away bicycling at the moment, so we didn't manage to get him into the studio in time. But he is the man who has done the research which has been used as a key pillar on which the RFU's decisions have been made. And that what he is saying is that right now something has to be done about the safety and player welfare situation in rugby. That is the foremost reason for changing the tackle height. Away you go.
No, I probably sit where everyone else with all the players that have come out and sort of said, why are we doing this? I probably sit on that similar level, because I think of it how it affects everything at professional level rather than what we are talking about. Obviously, reading Ross's sum up yesterday, you know, funnily enough, he says in one part, you know, dropping when they dropped it to sternum heights in the championship, they got more concussions because they didn't mitigate the fact that they needed to do something to the ball carrier to change his thoughts of when he was carrying into contact. So if he dropped body height whilst they were hitting at sternum level, your head, a lot of it is around your head sharing the same, you're both the ball carrier's head and the tackler's head sharing the same airspace is
I like the way you've put that.
Is what the sort of nuances are of it. I get what they're trying to do. They've obviously looked at the trials that France did. Obviously, tragically, four players died in France over a very short period. Over a very short period of time. France wanted to make changes. Obviously, they were invested through the tragedies that were there. And just even though they had uproar and they had people disagreeing with it, they pushed on through it. Realistically, the drop in concussions from that trial is 8%. I don't know what that puts in
That's
numbers.
That's from Michael Ulwin's research. He has crunched the numbers and there's a whole raft of detail and data which I could read out, but I think in the interests of sort of trying to keep this moving along at pace, you're absolutely right. Theoretically, the reduction in head injuries that we could expect, I'm reading this, and this is coupled with a scenario in which we never see another upright tackler again, is theoretically 8%. But it is 8% in the right direction.
8% in the right direction. But I think there's how the RFU worded it for me, there's an underlying tone of trying to change the game. There's a lot of talk about evasion. yet they haven't done what France has done, which put in a law for the ball carrier that he wasn't allowed to drop his body height, which we haven't done. It will be encouraged, is what the RFU have said.
Yes.
Now then, who
it's called a partner law change. I've got the detail in front of me, so let me just read it. World Rugby readily approved the trial that took place in France, particularly when the French also proposed a creative and quite daring partner law change, in inverted commas, that would regulate the actions by the ball carrier. That is, they said that the ball carrier would not be permitted to drop their height into contact or to bend down and lead with the head. In their words, the defender must be able to tackle the ball carrier and so have access to his pelvis. Sorry for bringing the detail in, but I think
what the RFU have done is they haven't put that partner law in. So players are going to be encouraged to be more evasive. Well, what does that even mean? What does that mean to a referee, first and foremost? If someone does drop, can a ball carrier be now penalised for not using too much evasion or bending too much? There's a lot of grey area there. I see how this could work in lower community rugby. I think if you look at the fact that line speed's not as fast, so there isn't as much having to break off the line and get into someone's face before they catch the ball. Fitness levels aren't quite as strong, so you get more time on the ball, which allows you to be hopefully more evasive or move the ball. Obviously, skill sets also negate that in how, depending on the level of rugby. Are people as brave in community rugby in terms of because they don't have that technique? Not all players will be solid on their technique. Not all players in the Premiership are solid on their technique. Does that mean they don't want that physical smash all the time and they're gonna make those tackles further? I'm not really sure. I think fundamentally this is a change of how they want to see the game played. They want more offloads. They don't want as many rucks. They don't want... And if you can enforce this law...
Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
It depends why it's being done. I think, you know...
Answer the question that you've put. Do you think rugby... I mean, I think this is really interesting. And what I want to ask you about is... I completely understand. I've got no agenda in this at all. I can remember the days of playing aged 8, 9, 10 when it wasn't a hit, it was a tackle, and there was no reference. Always remember being told there's no reference to hits in rugby, et cetera, et cetera. And I can remember the days of accepting the tackle and rolling on your back and cheek to cheek and all that kind of thing. The game has moved so dramatically in terms of the levels of physicality in the last 20 years or so. We are now seeing enormous problems arising in player welfare. We've also got a product.
But also,
at the moment.
I also got to put that in perspective. Is we're looking for it.
Well, of course we are. But we
haven't looked for it through the whole history of rugby.
Sports science is 20 years old, whereas rugby is 170 years old, or whatever it is. 160 years old.
Sports science in rugby is only 26 years old. Because
that's what I mean.
But we didn't. We wouldn't be looking. We haven't been looking for this until the last 10 years.
Yes.
So you don't know. That say for the legal case that is coming, that has been brought against the RFU, World Rugby, WRU and everything by professional players for a period where no one was looking at this. Now they're saying that that's the RFU's fault, that's World Rugby's fault for not going into it. But every one of those players knew what they were getting into. It's a physical game. So I sit in two camps. Whatever you say about it, it is a contact sport and it's an unpredictable contact sport with split seconds decisions made at an unbelievable speed. And things will always go wrong. Now, do we embrace, this is a fundamental point, do we embrace that as a sport? And that is what we are. Like boxing, you get punched in the head. So do we embrace what we are? We are a physical game.
Yes.
Or are we trying to fundamentally change the game to get people, just to try and get more people to play the game? And what the article that I read that you sent me, where the guy's like, just so that more people will buy tickets to go watch elite level sport rather than... So what this is my confusion by it. I actually, the more I read the statistics, I'm like, why wouldn't you try this? But then you read that article and having played club rugby, playing rugby for Minch and playing in all the games that I've played, which granted isn't a lot, probably 16 my first year, I retired 8 and it's been reducing numbers since, but I've probably played 30 games for Minch. I don't think I've seen anyone... I think I might have seen one person go off with a head knock. It was probably from a breakdown rather than a tackle. Most of the tackles are fine because the actual forces that are going in aren't what they are in professional rugby. They're not you'll get a few CrossFit noses out there. Hello to all of you. You know who you are.
Can I just throw in then some of the layers that we will hopefully try and get into? And it's worth saying as well that we are going to be joined a bit later on by John Lorne from the RFU, who is the head of game development, and we'll hopefully have some of the answers as to not only what exactly the changes are, but how we have got to this point. And we're also going to be joined by a couple of old friends as well. So Paul Millam is the chairman of Aylesbury Rugby Football Club, which is where we went to do our Play Together, Stay Together game. We didn't have any head knocks that day, did we? Mm. And James Buckland, of course, many of you will remember as a Leicester Tiger, and he is now the head of rugby at Aylesbury as well. So looking forward to hearing about how we've got to this point from an RFU's perspective and what those who are living the day-to-day expect the impact to be. But let me just come back to some of these theories, I suppose, and the layers to this debate. So you touched on litigation. There's obviously this enormous court case going on with the professional players, but on Thursday last week, it was also announced that there is now a class action from a group of 55 former amateur players. And we've got lots of information about that.
Am I allowed to jump in on that?
Please do.
So I read that article and they chose to highlight a fellow who's playing in that. And he has been concussed 18 times. Firstly, he doesn't have to play. It's an amateur sport, so he can stop whenever. So I'm not sure how he's blaming the game on this because he doesn't need to play.
Right.
But he also was playing 80 games a season.
That's more than once a week. That is an impressive...
Because he played both rugby union and rugby league.
Yeah.
Who has recommended that playing 80 games a season is a good idea? No professional team ever does it, so no, he's not watching people who are playing 80 games.
Yeah.
And how can you, as an amateur sport where you don't have to turn up on a weekend, probably your mates are telling you that after 18 concussions that you probably need to look after yourself. I think probably after six, your mates would be going, mate, doesn't look good. Have you ever thought about this?
So that's a really good point because there are a lot of people out there saying, I am a rugby player, it will be my decision as to whether I play and I take the risks associated with playing the sport. And I completely understand that argument. The flip side of that, though, is that can you actually genuinely have a governing body in charge of the sport in which they know about the health risks, but they turn a blind eye to them on the grounds that people have signed waivers? I mean, that is simply not responsible governance.
But then who's doing that?
Well, I'm not saying that they are, but I'm saying that that is the suggestion of some people on social media.
You could also flip the other side around and go, now, other sports like rugby league, we're getting loads of vibes out of rugby league that they're looking to massively change their sport. They hit higher than we do. We have learned from rugby league in terms of how, you know, Sean Edwards coming in, Kevin Sinfield, targeting the ball and stopping offloads is the main point of rugby league. That has come into our game. Now, rugby league, you're not getting a lot of, or I'm certainly not aware of a lot of pushback coming from rugby league. And it's still the physical sport that it's always been. And it's accepted what it is, and it's comfortable in its own skin. We, I believe, as a rugby union, possibly, and this is no slight on rugby league players, but of a generally well-schooled, well-background, are we pandering to a greater narrative of we have to change the game because it's for the good of the game, where I actually think it's ruining the game, is my actual belief. But
what is ruining the game?
Changing law to...
Protect the individual player.
Well, to not...
Lessen the risks?
To change the game, fundamentally change the game to a different game than what it is. A test match, for me, playing England, is a test match. It's not supposed to be easy. That's why not everyone can do it. Obviously, the health of the people who are playing the game is important, but also the skill set within rugby is to learn that there are different tackles and try and execute them and get better at them. I think now people are less technically advanced in the way that they tackle because of how defenses just fly up. So your timing is different. You don't get to place a lot of the time. You don't get to place people, and it's all about winning that gain line. I would have liked to have pushed the tackle line back so people have to come gives the attackers more time.
So you would put the offside line 2 metres behind the ruck.
Or play around with it. But then, on a caveat to that, Jamie George's tackle on the weekend and the other Saracen player, I've forgotten his name, who got yellow carded, were horrendous technique. And that's one of the best hookers in world rugby, and he's still got it horribly wrong. So it's not going to say that it's always going to happen, but that is the whole point of a contact sport is sometimes you're going to get it wrong.
So the two points I've put forward there around players accepting the risk and signing up to it, the flip side of that being the governing body just simply not being able to accept that as a rightful way to run the game, knowing what they know. Are you saying therefore that players, if they want to play rugby, you've got to accept the risks, sign up to it and get on with it?
Yeah, I definitely think there is some of that. What you want it to be, it's a physical sport in every nature. There is a line in the sand moment for me where you've just got to go, right, we've done everything you can. And from my point of view, you've taken away deliberate stuff. Majority of shoulder charges that were in, you know,
the spear tackles. Taking players in the air, etc.
You've mitigated that down to now what you're talking about is decisions made in split seconds, whilst a lot of the time something might happen that you just physically can't react quick enough to deal with. Because you're worried about what's going on the outside. There are so many decisions going on in rugby players' brain. Now, even saying within that, a lot of the time players still get it wrong when they don't need to be there. You know, I would say this about England for the women's World Cup final. That red card, she should never have even been there. There was no her tackle choice was
Lydia Thompson, yeah.
But that's got nothing to do with where the tackle height is. She knew she shouldn't be up there, but she was still up there. So what they're doing by putting it down to the waist level is they're saying, so if they get it wrong and they're a bit higher, they'll be in that green zone, which they've called between your armpit and your waist. They'll be in the soft zone where there is very low risk of injury. And if they go lower, they'll be in an orange zone. Well, actually, we're tackling in an orange zone or whatever it is. So waistline, they're saying, is orange, which still means you will get head injuries. But if you go a bit higher, you'll be in the green zone. Whereas if you've set the green zone, if you go a bit higher, you'll be in the red zone.
Can I add to that? So Brian Moore's written a very good article in The Telegraph titled, "Changes to Tackle Laws are more important, than your social media outrage." And he makes the very interesting point here. Much of this hyperbole might have been prevented if the RFU had concurrently announced the following, which I'm told will be done imminently. Number one, waist will mean navel, not top of the shorts. Although if you wear your shorts quite high, like I do, then those two come together. And if it's just above there, but definitely below the sternum, you will not be penalised. So there is... let me go on. If the first tackle is legal, a secondary tackle below the sternum will be allowed. And number three, a ball carrier has an obligation under the current laws to not dip into a collision in a manner which endangers a would-be tackler. We're not talking about a couple of inches when the ball carrier braces themselves for impact, but a sudden and drastic change in height which renders a potentially legal tackle illegal.
But what does that mean about Jonah Loma running over Mike Catt? Who's in the wrong there? Is Jonah Loma going to get penalised for being too aggressive and dropping his shoulder to bump him off? This is the problem with everything that... You manipulate things to try and get an outcome, but then something that you haven't thought of then creates more problems, yeah. which is what they said with the championship trial. They didn't do what the French did to change.
Well, they didn't have the ball. They didn't prevent the ball carrier from dipping.
So a lot of the time they dipped and it went head on head. Why can't they just agree that actually creating better tackle technique and this sort of information that is coming out? People are far more aware of what is a dangerous tackle, what is a safe tackle. Yes, they still happen. Now, will even going waist prevent this? Probably not. Because someone trying to go up people's footwork. Now, I'm always thinking, the problem is with this, I'm always thinking about professionalism rather than amateur.
Yeah.
Whereas I think, I wouldn't know if there's a stat on this, but I would think amateur tackles from everything I've seen are generally a lot lower. And they're obviously lower impact. And that guy who wrote the article that you sent to me said there isn't actually an issue in the game, which obviously then the 55 people who are suing the RFU, WRU, and World Rugby will have a different point of view on that.
Yeah.
But then if all of them got concussed 18 times, who's the fool in some respects? And that's nothing against that fellow. He obviously loved his rugby.
So we'll come on to this, because what we'll do is we'll get into the detail of the sort of the club's reaction and the RFU's views on how we've got to this point, as we've said. I just want to bring in some of the feedback that has come from the French trial. Okay, so this law that we're now having of tackle height being reduced to the navel is now not only taking place in France, but also in New Zealand. And I understand that it's probably going to be rolled out in other territories in the not too distant future, Wales, Ireland, Scotland, etc., and possibly even all the way up to World Rugby. So These are some of the outputs from a conversation between the RFU and the French rugby in terms of the feedback to what France has learned since bringing in this new directive. So the reduction in tackle height laws was in direct response, as you mentioned, Mike, to the tragic deaths of four young players in the community game in 2019. It was explained to the game that change was coming, but there was no prior widespread consultation with the clubs. That came after the decision was taken. So they changed and then they did the explanation. It's impacting 80% of the clubs in France. It was a very difficult start, said those running the French game, slightly confused by COVID as well, but after two full years of implementation, there is no further discussion on the topic. So it's been bedded in, they're off and running again. They have recently looked at 50 games and compared pre and post rates of head impacts, concussion, yellow cards, and they say that the numbers are vastly reduced. There is further specific quantitative data on its way. Player welfare and safety was the initial priority, but the behaviour of the ball carrier has changed, resulting in more offloads and a more attacking, faster game. They've continued educational meetings with referees to implement the changes. Initially, it was an increase in penalties, but players and coaches have adapted. There are now no double tacklers, which opens the game up more. A ball carrier dipping into the tackler is penalised. If in the attempt of scoring a try, a player dives over the line and a try is scored, then the try stands. But if the player dives and is unsuccessful, a penalty is given against the attacking player.
Right. What happens in pick and goes?
Don't ask silly questions at this point. I'm going to come back to that. A couple of bits which I think are really interesting. They are seeing a significant improvement in tackling technique and 70% of clubs have increased tackle coaching. In summary, the French are 100% satisfied with the initiative. They have reduced injury rates and created a better game with more continuity. Interestingly, player numbers are up 12.3% since this became law. I'm not for a moment suggesting that 12% growth in player numbers is down solely to this. They've got a World Cup and they're winning Grand Slams, but apparently it is a better game to which more people are attracted.
So that's my thing. Is this an actual concussion move or is this a game to a place to increase participation and make our game more open to diversity? And
does it matter? Game has got so many problems at the moment.
But I don't. So this is where I'm stuck on my points. So, you know, speaking to Danny Grucock briefly on Saturday, who I saw, he's coaches at Bristol Academy, but he also does Clifton School. He's not sure about what that evasiveness means. Are players going to be penalised if they're not evasive enough? So if you just run straight, even if and dip a little bit, are you going to be punished for not being evasive enough? If someone tackles low, can anyone stop the ball from offloading it? Or are we just now going, well, hey, you can offload.
It'd
be like playing Jonah Lomu rugby on the PlayStation, just offload every time and no one can defend it. Is that also what you want to see? Is that what we want to see? Do we not want to see any physicality in the game anymore? So these are the fundamental points of what I'm trying to get across is where is rugby union pinning the flag or whatever? Why I love rugby union is because every single facet of that game is supposed to be a competition. Breakdown, mauls, lineouts, high balls, rucks, restarts,
scrums.
Are you now saying that if you lower them and it's always, your arms are always going to be free and you can always be evasive, you can always offload, that's not really a competition. It's not one man versus the other man who can do the best, who can come out best on top of that tackle situation. It's not anymore.
Nope,
the attacker is always then favoured. You know, where does that then lead to people who are trying to steal balls, jackal balls? Are you going to say, well, now you can't be in that position because someone's going to have to drop that height? And, you know, in my opinion, probably where most people have head knocks that don't even get seen. I would be far more interested in finding out first what is classed as a concussive blow. Can we put values on it? Can we then monitor it? Can we figure out where we're going with it before pushing everyone to waist tackling? I think it will. I actually think it will work in the community game for the reasons I've said. I think the people who are playing the game, I think it often ends up there. You know, the lower you go down the rank, the less people want to make that collision, if you want to use that word, or the dominant tackle. They absorb more, you know, fundamentally. Also funny to say that because the way we wrote the law, which I think a lot of the problem sits in, is the way it's delivered. You know, when we changed that you had to be lower the height, so that when those old hits of where someone really lowered themselves and they into the tackler's gut and then you got pulled down, you sort of smother tackled and then went down and tried to steal the ball. They've stopped now because everyone's too worried about being upright when they make a tackle, even if the ball carrier runs into them. So now people try and drop and you create more concussions. So when you sometimes when you manipulate laws or you, not manipulate, when you bring in new things, it actually has the alternate effect.
The law of unintended consequences.
Now, if you put this, I'm sort of with you, I'm not really sure where I sit on this. My brain, all my passion and everything for rugby is telling me this is not a good idea. But I'm also sitting in the camp of reading what Brian Moore said, more offloads, more tries. Is that what we want? But then that's accepting that we're fundamentally not going to live rugby how it is. A test match isn't going to be the same.
But I suppose on that, what you would say is that predominantly most of the metrics in rugby at the moment are heading the wrong way. Player numbers, I mean, we're down from 300 to 170,000 in the UK. There are players walking away from the game in their droves already.
On that, I think I read a few things on social media about people who have left the game. He goes, well, I was thinking about coming back. There's no chance I'm coming back now. So RFU, we did something for you around
play together, stay together. Game on rules.
Bringing people back to the game. People who've been out the game aren't that fit, don't feel comfortable in their tackle technique. And now you're telling them they've got, maybe they can't even bend over that low to make a waist tackle if someone runs straight at them, even though depending on their variance of evasion ability that they're supposed to be using. And they do run straight at you, even if they run upright. Some people can't get down that low and don't really want to. A few lads I've seen have got beer bellies that big that they can't bend that low.
Right.
So what do you do then? So do they just leave the game?
It's really difficult. I think, one of the most difficult shows we've done because there is a very valid and vicious argument on the left and exactly the same on the road.
I've thought about this way more than what I thought I would over the weekend and everything else and reading everyone's sort of chirping in comments. You want to see a faster game. You want to see a game with more ball time in play. These are what generally a fan would want to see.
I think I'm right in saying it was 32 minutes ball in play, England, South Africa in November.
Yeah. But also, doing this, you could end up having shitload more scrums.
Why?
People dropping the ball in waist tackles, spilling it, offloads going wrong. You could end up with just as many scrums. It doesn't, you're talking, this is community rugby. It's already, I suppose, there's a load of scrums anyway, so it doesn't really matter. But I sit on one side where I could see it could be really nice, positive, a build for a young player, build their athletic ability, avoiding people, keeping two hands on their ball, keeping two hands on the ball, running and looking for offloads because they know they don't have to worry about getting wiped out from one way or the other. If you put it in a professional situation and people's tackle technique, the athletes are so good at professional rugby now that if you want to be able to make an effective tackle, you have to be as close to that person before you drop your body height.
Yep.
Whereas if you are going for waist, especially when it's in a quite close combat area, is very hard to do. I was an outside centre who made his living on wide tackles, which were always around the waist. Technique was to do that sort of dive tackle, swing your legs around the body, you'd be straight over the top of the ball. That now isn't the usual tackle. 13s are flying straight up, trying to cut things off, which then doesn't put you in that
situation.
But are they
doing that in the community game? They're trundling up as quickly as they can.
No,
I got there as
not.
Quick as I could, ref.
No, I'm comparing. Some still try and fly up, but then in that same space, some fly up, some don't. So the pass is on anyway.
Yeah.
And then you can do it now, whether you've then got this, depending on what level you're playing at, is do you have the skill set to do that? But defense is the easiest thing to do because it doesn't really involve skill. It just involves getting in a line, talking. You don't need skill to do it. You just need energy. You need to be able to, and will to do it. Mm. So that's not going to change, which is why I said if you gave the attackers more time by
dropping the offside line back 2 meters.
Where we never see people get done for offside, even in the professional game, when a lot of the time you go, that's borderline.
Hmm.
I would give people more time. They wouldn't be able to fly up all the time.
Do you think you've just fixed the problem?
Well, no, I don't. Because then the nature of professional sport, you'd find a way of getting around it. But
the whole point is you
can be more evasive and you can be if you have more time. And the biggest thing that you test matches, you get less time.
Yep.
So, and the higher up you go, people are better and more organized. And that is the problem. So, I would have said first and foremost was pulling that defensive line back would be a better thing because it would make things, it would maybe slow people's
approach to going up and hitting people. And then you would naturally be playing around and be more at the back. You know, on those at the back ones, you know, all those tackles are nice. Nice side on tackle.
Yeah.
But it's a choice. You know, I thought the day that we brought the seatbelt tackle in is a bad tackle. I use a seatbelt tackle all the time when I was playing. I haven't seen anyone get concussed from a seatbelt tackle yet. Now you're not allowed to use it. Really effective tackle of basically making a good tackle whilst also being able to stop the offload and the forward momentum at quite a quick rate and be able to then spin and get back on your feet to compete. But we can't do that anymore. So now you've got to dive at someone from behind. If you miss, you slide down and you get flicked in the face, kicked in the face.
I tell you who's going to the potting shed to get his boots out. Joe Worsley. Time for Big Joe to come back.
But, you know, talking to Hask is quite in favour of it because that's how he tackled. But then Hask and Wurzel's tackle technique was great. But Wurzel got... I mean, he's got a skull as thick as an iron bar. So, you know, he walked into knees a lot of the time, but he still managed to get up. Yeah. But yeah, he was great at cutting people in two. But that tackle shouldn't have gone.
Dan Lydia's as well.
But I'd also say that Joe operated in a time where that flying up wasn't what it is today. You know, even though they played, you know, the first press defense that they ever did, I don't know whether it was as fast as what it goes up as today.
Let's bring in our guests in just one moment. I just quickly want to ask you the question that you've posed three or four times now, because I think that does provide quite an interesting framework for where we're trying to go with this. You keep saying, does rugby need to change? Does the game need to... Are we thinking about a sport that has to speed itself up?
Or fundamentally, does it need to become wider and easier to play so that more people play it?
So you're asking more questions again, but what is your view on the state of the game at this point in time?
Well, the problem is I'm sitting on the fence here a little bit because I don't want the game to change. I want it to be what it is, people to learn the skill sets of different tackles.
Even though it is racked with challenges at the moment.
Of course, yeah, of course it is. But then are we saying that this is going to solve all problems? It's not going to have any. As you say, it's only going to drop realistically 8%.
8%.
But then participation is up 12%. Is that continually going to grow? I think we're at a very early age of what we're trying to do, and I just feel...
So different question. Do you agree that the game has to do something?
No, I think people have to get better at what they're doing. I think that a lot of the high shots that are red cards now are completely players' fault.
Think community game again.
Oh.
Numbers are shelling from 300 to 170 in 3 years.
Yes, but they're shelling because of COVID, majority-wise. And they're also shelling because of this, of the talk of the media around this, and parents going, well, young mums.
Exactly.
Yeah, but
there is much noise around the negative health impact of playing rugby at the moment. Does the game need to do something to be seen to be trying to address that?
To an extent, yeah, I think it does.
Is this going too far?
I think so.
What's the happy medium?
Well, the happy medium is, was this a problem in the community rugby? What's the data on that? Do we have any?
Yes, so I've got a whole raft
because,
of data here.
All those games that they've made this decision on are elite-level games.
I will read because it's quite lengthy. So this comes from the article by Michael Alwyn, who we've referenced already, who has worked out the best-case scenario is an 8% reduction in concussions. He goes on to call the new measures unworkable. He's got a very interesting sort of paragraph all about the demonisation of the tackler and where rugby's going. We're still sending players off 6 years on, not because they're delinquent lunatics who must be punished, but because some situations are impossible to avoid reliably in such a fast-moving sport.
Also, I think he's probably talking about professional sport.
He is
as well.
There. Almost exactly 4 years ago, the RFU cut short a trial in the Championship Cup. Yes. That trial saw the threshold for a high tackle to move to the armpit line. Nigel Melver had some stuff to say, which was sort of not terribly committed. Data shows the first objective of lowering tackle heights was achieved. There was a 24% decrease in all tackles where contact was made by the tackler above the ball carrier's armpit line. So in general, the trend came down. There was a 25% decrease in tackles where contact was made above the armpit line by an upright tackler on an upright ball carrier. There was a 41% decrease in the number of tackles where contact was made with the head or neck of the ball carrier.
When they lowered it to the armpit.
When they lowered it to the armpit, correct. So that is a fairly significant...
But the concussion rate went up.
I think possibly because the
the
carriers didn't dip. Ross Tucker, who we've referenced already, says the premise of the championship trial was to lower the height of the sternum. You'll recall that in our 2016 meeting, the expert rugby group had suggested trials that lowered height outside of the top level of rugby, and the RFU embarked on this one in 2017 because there was already a feeling that the sanction-driven changes in the elite game were not producing the desired results.
But that doesn't give you the numbers of what's happening. They're running numbers off the professional game for the amateur game. What are the numbers for the amateur game?
Tins, I think at this point we're just circling a little bit.
We are
packed
circling
with questions. So let's bring in our guests, and it's very good to have them all with us. First of all, we've got John Lorne, who is the head of game development at the RFU. Welcome to you. And we have got Paul Millam, who's the chairman of Aylesbury Rugby Club, and James Buckland, of course, many will remember from his days with the Leicester Tigers, who is the head of rugby at Aylesbury as well. Welcome to all of you. And John, I'm going to come to you first of all. Well done and thank you for being the man to put his head above the parapet from all things RFU. I imagine it's been a fairly lively few days, first and foremost. How are we feeling about this announcement and about, I suppose, the reaction to it? 70% in the Telegraph's online poll saying, please don't do it. Give us a sense of what the water temperature has been like at RFU Towers over the last few days.
Yeah, believe me, it's fair to say that the reaction has been very strong, quite a lot of emotion around, strong feeling. But putting that to one side, I think we still believe it's the right thing to do, really focusing on player welfare, not just now, but in the future as well.
Tell us a little bit just about your role, first and foremost, because when I say head of game development, what does that actually mean? What is your involvement in the decision and the process that's been revealed?
Yeah, so my role very much is around looking at the community game in terms of how we support coaches, referees, things like pitch side care as well, and how we support community rugby players more broadly. In terms of this decision, I was involved in pulling together some of the options for the RFU Council to consider, along with other colleagues. And then obviously you put those forward to council and they make their decisions.
We have done a lot of research into this. We've got pages and pages of data and notes and views and contrasting opinions. Can you just give me the headlines, I suppose, from your perspective as to why this is the right decision? What are the numbers and the trials and the outputs that you have used to get to this point?
Yeah, I think we've looked at three main areas, really. Going back to sort of 2015, 2016, it's a combination of world research, and it's stuff that we've also done in this country. So if I go back, there's been the championship trial that was run in 2019, I think it was, over here. There's the Stellenbosch trial that's taken place recently. And there's the French valuation of their lower tackle height as well. And we've used all of those, plus our recent change in the age grade game where we lowered the height of the tackle to the armpit. Where we've been influenced is that higher height body tackles by an upright, with an upright ball carrier, and an upright tackler at speed, they're responsible for significantly more head acceleration events and obviously potentially concussions.
So John, a lot of the feedback that you read in the report by Ross and was all based around what's happening in the elite game. And then what you read online is everyone saying that they don't, playing in the community game doesn't have these issues. They haven't seen it yet. We're forcing these new laws onto them. They don't want it. They don't see there's a problem. Is there any record of what are the concussion numbers are like in the grassroots community game?
Yeah, obviously there are concussions in the community game, and the numbers tend to differ by level, Mike. So if you looked at, for example, a game in National One, which is the top end of the community game, you might expect to see a concussion one every eight games. And obviously at different levels, that may be more like one in every 15 games. In the age grade game, it tends to be around that 1 in 7, 1 in 8 in the under 18 boys. So it varies across the different levels of the community game. Concussions do happen in the community game. And I think one of the big challenges that the sport has faced for a while is it's that fear of concussion as well, which has often dominated the headlines.
So, this was my my point, having read everything, and my instinct always goes back to the professional game, which is just because that's where I spent majority of my life. And then, but I would say I've played, you know, 30 local rugby games for Minchin Hampton since, and I think I might have seen one concussion in there. But you look at it and it's so, obviously then there are varying degrees. This is also the problem. Like National One is way better than what Minchin Hampton's player. So the athletes will definitely be better. They'll train differently. Techniques, skill sets are obviously going to be better. So yeah, there is a floating scale within this, but I think that is what's frustrating everyone is the problem that is seen at elite level is being passed on to the lower levels without actually where that might not be necessarily the problem. So is this more about concussion or is it more about trying to change the game to allow people who don't want to play because they're thinking of everything that's been negative in the papers about concussion, and it's trying to alleviate that to allow a greater participation sport?
I think fundamentally it's about reducing the risk of concussion or the number of concussions. I believe that there could be some secondary benefits from this, which could be the game might become slightly more fluid in terms of offloads, passes, movement, etc. But that would be a secondary benefit, I believe. And that may take time to emerge, Mike, you know, as players and teams become used to the changes.
And it's predominantly, this is to alleviate head injuries in rugby. That is why these decisions are being made first and foremost.
Absolutely.
And there is scientific proof that making these changes will reduce head injuries, but at the moment there are no targets or numbers as to by how much.
That's correct, yeah.
Okay, that's really helpful. Thank you, John. You've laid that out very well for us. Thank you for sitting and waiting, Paul and James. Paul, I'm going to come to you first of all, as chairman of Aylesbury RFC. What is your reaction to the announcement from the RFU last week?
There's a couple of reactions from my point of view. Primarily, it's a fundamental change to the game that I don't think is workable. That's based on my perception of what we've been told it's going to be at the moment. There may be more detail that maybe changes that. But at the minute, it, certainly talking to players and refs at our club, the refs aren't really sure how they're going to ref it. The players don't really want to play it. And that's not the 13 players. That's across the picture, and certainly including some of our senior first team players. We lose them from the game from their understanding of what it's changing to. More than that, the lack of consultation. There just seems to be I haven't been asked anything. I saw a piece come out a few weeks ago that suggested this was going to happen, which I sort of shared with the players, and the reaction was very much as if that would happen. And now we're here. And it's been decided, and that's it, we've done. And as far as I know, no club has been approached or asked what they think of it presented with the evidence that this is being based on.
Okay. James, the same question to you, really. I mean, head of rugby at Aylesbury, you've been to the very top of the game. Tell us your view on it from a coach's perspective and what your senior players are saying to you.
Oh, mate, I've been in the game for 35 years as a junior, mini junior player, a pro player, and then back into coaching, and then back into amateur playing again. I honestly believe the game's as safe now as it's ever been. I think the new rules they brought in recently in regards to head contact and the sanctions around it. My feeling before we were throwing the bombshell last week was let's give that chance to bed in, because the stuff around concussion and everything else at the community end seems to be taken a lot more seriously, in my opinion, than the professional end. You know, players aren't under pressure to play, so they're already really well protected. The questions are, I've just got so many questions, because we keep hearing about all these stats and we're talking about reducing head-on-head concussions, but at the same time we're talking about reducing the overall concussion rate as well. Because I mean, I've been concussed through head-on-head, but I've also been concussed pretty well from knee-on-head as well. And at first glance, it looks to me like we're doing the best we can to take the risk away from the attacking players, but now we seem to be placing a lot more risk on the defending players by forcing their tackle choice. There's a well-known saying in rugby that if you can't explain it clearly enough, then you don't understand it well enough. And it's just not clear. It's just not clear why the changes have been made and what the reduction, what we're looking to achieve from the changes.
But there is something within this that we've just talked about before we came on, in the fact that, yes, it says waistline, but then if you get more into it, it's actually, if you go up to the navel, then still that's all fine.
Well let's bring...
Mate, the community game, navels are a different... Mate, what's the ref going to go around pulling up people's shirts before the game, checking people's navels?
Let me bring in John at this point, because I suppose that there are two questions, really, which is that this has fallen from the skies, John, and that there have been headlines written and a lot of reaction. I suppose these things are never easy to break to the rugby public. Maybe one or two regrets in that regard. Is there considerably more information that is going to be released now as to what these directives, I suppose the finer points of them, and how they are going to be implemented and refereed? Is there a lot more information on its way?
Yes, there is. I'm happy to share a little bit with James and Paul and yourselves now, in terms of the announcement was waist and below, and we had still to define what we meant by waist. The waist will be defined as the area between, if you can imagine, the line of the navel and the line of the sternum. So it's that what you might call the midriff area, or the tummy or the stomach area. So that will be an area where, you know, players will still be able to make contact and make tackles in that area. Obviously, what we're keen to do is try and keep two heads out of the same airspace and avoid those upright tackles around the sternum and higher, certainly above the sternum, should I say.
What about more than one tackler involved in a tackle? I mean, you hear and you see a lot. Are there directives around that? How many people can actually compete at?
Yeah, there's no intention to make it a one-person tackle. We believe that by preserving the area above the waist up to the line of the sternum, it gives the area of the thighs and that area above the waistband as a target area for two tacklers.
But you are then, by the nature of that, you are then throwing the two defenders' head into the same airspace.
You're also sending more than one player into the offload space as well, looking for a split-second offload. And those both... attacking and defending players are going to be upright in that space. And the reality of the community end of the game is, whilst the directives are trying to encourage more attempted offloads, we all know that's just going to lead to more scrums, which is something
you
else.
You should be happy, James.
I'm over the moon.
That's what I said as well. That's what we just said.
And the reality is, like, we've just had a load of new rules come in to try and take scrums out of the game. And now we've brought in another set of rules, which I tell you now, are going to lead to another 10 to 15 scrums every game.
Do you have a response to that, John? I mean, has there been any sort of work around the unintended consequences of this? Do you know how the game is going to change when you lower the tackle height to below the navel?
We've got the experience from France, where they introduced a lower tackle height in 2019. They were slightly different to us in that they made it a single-person tackle. What they've seen and what they've told us is that they've seen, after an initial period of, shall we say, embedding, they've seen increased number of passes, offloads, line breaks, and a slight reduction in tackles and rucks as a result, because obviously the ball's in play more often, so it's become more fluid.
Can I ask you about the ball carrier in this as well? Because I think I'm right in saying that in the changes that were made in France, it was actually what is known as...
partner law.
A partner law. So the ball carrier was not allowed to dip into the tackle at any point, but that's only a sort of guidance under these RFU directives. Is that right? Or is that very much part of this?
Is some more detail coming around that?
Yeah, yes, there is. I mean, fundamentally, I suppose I want to try and reassure, we don't want to deprive the ball carrier of the ability to brace for contact or to change their body height. And under current law, the ball carrier does have obligations and responsibilities. So, you know, the ball carrier will be able to dip and carry the ball low. But in doing so, they do have a responsibility not to, I guess, initiate the head contact with the tackler.
This is now, I think, we're getting into what I see are the problems. Is, you know, refereeing's hard enough. Community refereeing is even harder in a lot of cases. How are they going to make the judgment on A, what's the right tackle height? B, what's the right ball carrier height that's not pushing it too low? And then even if you do make a dominant tackle at that low waist height, you could easily, if you catch a person in the right way, his legs are going to go flying in the air, he's going to land on his head, and then it's going to be a spear tackle. So I just feel that there's a lot of grey area that needs really filling to satisfy you know, James and Paul's, you know,
concerns.
Concerns.
You've got a more recent clip than that, Tins. You've got the Tour Saver chap. You seen that clip where he sat down those lads on the edge? Yeah, so the students are watching that at college today and they're like, that's amazing. I just want to go and get a ball in my hands and start sitting people down. And yet that would be a red card now.
This is a conversation that myself and Alex were going around in circles about before. And John, I don't know whether you've got an opinion on it. Are we fundamentally trying to change what rugby is to appease what is this, the 2023 narrative of everything's got to be health and safety driven? You know, it's like asking a boxer not to punch as hard. It's like asking an MMA fighter, you can only leg kick to the sternum, you can't kick to the head. Rugby is a, as much as you might want to say it's an evasion sport, it's a collision-based sport, an unpredictable collision-based sport where you can't control every moment of it. And there has been demonstrations of when we've tried to mess around with things and we've dropped it. The championship trial for starters, where they did drop it to armpit height, led to more concussions and it had to be abandoned. I feel that the whole point around health and safety was to make it that the genuine red cards for malice and being stupid were gone, which I think we have done. Now, rugby, and I've been part of it for pretty much all its professional time, the skill set is to learn the numerous different ways of tackling. That would be around the legs. It'll also be when you're not in a position to do that, still being able to drop and hit. Now, I agree that players don't get it right all the time and there are going to be mistakes, but I don't think that level of malice that used to be there where people just went with no tackle technique, I think that's all gone. And I feel we're getting to a point where we have to draw a line in the sand of what rugby is. Is that something that will ever happen, or do you think it's always got to be just made purely of looking at you? Because I don't think you're never going to eradicate concussion in the game. So where do we draw the line that we're doing too much to the game and a test match is no longer a test match?
I think you've asked a number of questions there, but I'll try and start with the first one. Rugby, we have to be upfront about this, Mike. You're right. Rugby will always have an element of physicality around it, and so it should. You know, that's what makes it so exciting for people. We're genuinely this change. We're trying to find ways to make the game, you know, safer. And if we can reduce concussions by 3-4%, brilliant. It's going in the right direction. But with this change, we've tried to retain the essence of what rugby's all about. You know, we want players to go forward and carry the ball forward. We want players to make aggressive tackles. But we really want to focus on this front-on tackle and just through this experimental law variation, see if we can make a dint in the number of concussions that players may be suffering as a result of these type of tackles.
Here's a question for you, James. Obviously, it's been run in France and it has had, it's had a
12.3% player increase.
Yeah, player increase time. And also reduced the level of concussions. Is it the fact that we might have to try it to prove it right or wrong, or do you think that you'd lose too many players too quickly to even bother trying it?
Listen, mate, I play rugby all my life. I'm not going to run away from the game, but I do think you're going to lose a load of players off the back of this. I do. I think the people that are going to be most challenged are the coaches and the referees as well. I think the referees have already had enough. You know, you've got community referees having to coach scrums from all angles, mauls from all angles, breakdowns from all angles, and now you're asking them to go around and measure people's navels as well. I want the game to be as safe as it possibly can be, but I don't want it to be at the point where it's not rugby.
If I can come in, it's the sudden nature of this as well. To give the RSU some credit, they've done some really good work on evolving all this head stuff. Headcase came in, probably about 10 years ago, I think. It was adopted by pretty much every rugby club I've spoken to, certainly by us. So every player, we got just under 700 players at our club. They all work through the headcase protocol. All our coaches take the headcase online test and qualify that way. We run all our senior players and junior players without any incident of concussion, which doesn't happen as regularly as people may think. They go through the return to play protocol through our physios, and if anybody tries to bring it back too soon, they're stopped. So this evolution of the game and the issues with concussion has been excellent, I think. The RFU have done it really well. So why we are now here, where I don't think we can get to where this new law would take us, but to evolve to it and to work with it and to work with us on it, I think would have been much healthier than us sitting here now saying, asking all these questions, some of which can't be answered. Yeah.
John, can I ask you a couple of questions just around, I suppose, some of the practicalities? I mean, how are teams expected to fend the ruck on their own line under these directives?
I guess we've got to try and separate out different types of tackles in different types of situation. So those scenarios, those pick and go scenarios around their own line, obviously the both the ball carrier and the defender are often bent over in that situation. And so crucially as well, in terms of how that might be refereed, any head contact in those situations is generally of a lower force and a lower impact. So the risk of concussion is obviously decreased. So we envisage that, broadly speaking, those areas will be refereed exactly the same as they are now.
Just out of interest, why? Because ultimately, we can quote the French success of their tests continuously, but we're not doing the same thing as them. So what makes it think that it's going to have the same success when we're going to still be able to have two man tackles? They're going to have to tackle at the same height, so they're going to be in the same headspace from a two-man tackle point of view. The ball carrier is still allowed to drop his body height, so you're still going to be bringing now his shoulder or his elbow into that the tackle height of the defender. Whilst you're solving one problem, because you haven't adopted the whole thing that France has done, which has been proven, you're still a little bit of guesswork, but you're taking the best bit of it and saying this is going to happen, but you haven't taken the whole thing. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I don't think I said that the ball carrier couldn't drop. I said what we're looking to do is not to deprive the ball carrier of that opportunity, but clearly if they drop their body height in a certain way, that may lead to sanction.
But yeah. there's a lot of grey area there, isn't
it? What do you make of the scenario that you are in right here, right now? There's obviously a lot that has gone into making these changes, and yet those playing the sport, are 70% of them are rejecting them. I'm just interested as to, is the dialogue going to reopen around this, do you think, John? Or is this just going to be driven through regardless of what those on the shop floor are saying?
I think what there was, they wanted to make the decision early so further engagement could take place with the game. Clearly, one of the things that we were very keen to establish over the next 8 months before next season is that training and support out to the game, to coaches, to referees and to players, which would allow the changes then to hopefully be embedded in the best way possible before the start of next season. And some of the detail that I've not been able to share with you tonight, that will be and is being developed at the moment. So there will be, no doubt, some consultation with people like James and Paul and others about exactly what it is that they're looking for from the RFU to give them the best chances of helping us embed this in the game.
I'd ask a question for James and Paul here. Is there wiggle room, do you think, at club level to... I just feel it's been delivered poorly by the RFU and it's made for the wrong headlines, whereas they could have put far more detail in when they talked about what they were trying to do, which might have got James and Paul to come back and go, okay, let's see if we can work and help you out. What do you think, Paul and James, in terms of, do you think if this gets pushed through and they can explain it right, are you prepared to give it a go for what they would say is the
good of the game?
I don't want to speak for Paul, but I think we need to understand what the bigger vision is. Like, where's the RFU trying to take the game? I think there's been a couple of things that have riled people up. It's the fact that we feel that this has been dropped on us without consultation. It hasn't been explained very clearly. I mean, Tins, to be fair, you're the first person to explain it that clearly to me. And you don't work for the RFU as far as I'm aware.
No, I'm not sure they'll let me work for them. No.
Not yet. We're angling, but not yet.
And the main problem being, I was having a conversation with someone for the RFU and they watched our game from a couple of weeks ago. And they said to me that under the present rulings, we only had two tackles that would have been deemed to be unfair or should have been penalised. But the whole thing for me is the referees now are going to be under so much more pressure from a refereeing perspective, from a playing perspective and from a coaching perspective. At the minute, it's defensively, you do not target anyone's head. And if you do, you will be sanctioned. And I just feel like we're putting a bit more pressure on the referees. If it's going to be a case of it's not that much change and this is specifically what we're going to do, and in terms of refereeing the pick and go, I mean, that's, mate, we had a pick and go on the weekend. The bloke came in head to knee height
and he went off with a head injury. Yeah. So to say that there isn't as much force on a pick and go as there is in a normal tackle, I don't know where that science has come from.
Do you think that would be a useful exercise, is to maybe you submit a game to the RFU or as many clubs can, and they go through those games and give, because if everything's going to be just two incidents, you're not really far off of what you're doing now, and then you'll get more clarity on what are those two incidents, why are they, you know, is that going to be something that the RFU should be looking at to do to try and help local clubs out?
Mate, I kick this off by saying I think the game's as safe now as it's ever been at community level, for sure. It's cleaner, it's faster, it's more attractive. As Paul said, we take any sort of injury so seriously. We had a young lad on Saturday who had a swollen knee on Thursday, was desperate to play. And we just said, no, mate, all your rugby's ahead of you. You're not playing. And mate, he'd have made half my tackles for me. I'd have been gagging to have him out there, you know. But I think there are a few need to get down and actually get involved in some community rugby, actually play some and see where they're at. Because I know they've had some ex-players on the committee, but how close are these people to the game? Because they've got to decide if the balance of making these changes is enough in terms of impacting the game to get the rewards they want. That's my question.
We'll offer Bill Sweeney a game for Aylesbury Vets next weekend.
You're very welcome.
I'll come down and play.
With or against Bill. Sorry, John, you were about to say something.
I'd be really interested to see this game played, but as we really get into on this, it hasn't seemed to be thought through yet, the full extent of what the nuance is against what we were told last week. But it'd be really interesting to see a game played with these new laws introduced and refed, to see what it looks like.
That's a really good point, Paul, that I think the RFU have to then put sort of some of the, well, I mean, even the French games, the different tiers of French rugby going all the way down from, I assume it goes from just under Pro de Deux, does it?
Yeah, I think Ligue 1 or something like that.
Ligue 1. And put one game of each so people can see what it looks like. I think the biggest problem I've had with it is I'm caught between what I see now at Minch playing and watching them, to also what I've experienced playing 18 years at top level. I just see the negatives. I'll be honest with you, that's just how I am. I see the athletes in professional sport, if I'm trying to tackle around waist all the time, how good that some people are stepping laterally, I'm thinking I'm going to get my head the wrong side more times than I'm going to get it on the right side, because if someone steps inside me and I'm already down at that height, there's nothing I can do. My head's going, it's getting knocked off, whatever. So I think if you could see that, if there were examples out there that were readily available for every club to see, ASAP, I think that would allow coaches to more process what it will look like, how it, and go from there. Obviously, it's going to be now different because you still have double tackles, and you've got to imagine that within that. But I think vision is the best way of people understanding.
I wonder if where this will net out is actually, if you think about how much rugby is a game of taking as much as you possibly can. Rugby is essentially how much can I get away with. By lowering the tackle height to the waist and knowing that players will always push the boundaries, you actually end up with tackles being made in the midriff, which is a much easier way to get to that point than saying to everybody, just tackle the midriff, because they'll still push the boundaries up again.
But that's what I think that's what Bucky's getting at, is that's what we see at amateur level rugby. We don't see it at professional. And I'm thinking it feels like it's more of a reaction to professional problems, and it's been forced on the community game.
That grey area is a problem for the referees. You're going to get referees at our level that anything above the shorts, they're going to penalise, because that's their interpretation. And you're going to get other referees that are going to give us that grey area around the navel. I mean, we coach leg chopping. We coach people to tackle safely. We coach people to go low. We don't coach people to tackle high. But as Tin say, invariably it's a part of the game. But tackling high isn't always dangerous.
It's a necessary tackle technique sometimes.
It is, mate. And there's some tackles, that's the tackle choice of some people, because they can't get low enough to make anything else.
Tim was talking about those people whose gut don't necessarily allow them to drop their knees and get in on people's knees.
There's big front rows in the lower
league. What percentage of the Aylesbury, you don't necessarily need to name names, but what percentage of the charges you look after are actually going to struggle to make these tackles?
Well, I can't name drop. There's going to be two or three lads, and I just like every week, leg chop, leg chop, leg chop, and they go high, mate. They go high. But they're not dangerous high. They're not dangerous high.
They're cuddly.
They are. They're looking for a cuddle, and they are sucking yards out of our gain line, just giving up yards. But again, you know, the reality is at community level, if you make a high percentage of your tackles, you're probably going to win the game. Rugby's for all different shapes and sizes. You know, I coach leg chops, but I've got to accept some lads are always going to go and look for an upper body shot. But that doesn't mean it's a dangerous tackle.
One of my other points that came out of this, the thing I love most about rugby is every facet of the game is a competition. Hmm. Whereas if we push it down to, we're basically giving people free offloads, which is ultimately what's could happen, then where does the competition come in that tackle area? The ball carrier has all the advantage, always should offload. Are we just going to go end-to-end try? Does that take that competitiveness out of grassroots rugby?
I think if the RFU are doing it because they want to see more offloads, then I think what they're going to see is more people jumping into that space to prevent the offload, which is going to lead to more dangerous collisions. Will it change the game? No, I don't think it's. I think it's just been badly managed. I don't think it's a necessary rule change at our level of the game at this stage. I think what we're doing at the minute is safe enough, and we need to keep going with it and keep educating people around the rules we've got at the minute and the head case staff and looking after people. I don't think we need this rule at the minute. However, we've had, like I said, someone from the RFU watched our game a couple of weeks ago, and they said out of all those tackles, only two would have been deemed outside of the new boundaries. So we seem to be doing all right. But then I can't speak for everyone else in the country. And this is the point. It's the consultation piece, which is the biggest piece, and understanding the RFU's bigger picture vision, where they're looking to take the game. That's the issue.
Can we talk about personal responsibility as well? We haven't mentioned that yet. Every player that ran out on Saturday went out there knowing there was a risk that they could injure themselves. Not just concussion. There's all manner of injuries you can get on a rugby pitch. At what point do you take that away from the players and then force them to play a game the way you want to play it, which probably isn't the way they want to play the game?
Well, that's a very interesting point, Paul, because, you know, last Thursday, I think at around about the same time that the RFU released this, there was also a lawsuit filed by 55 amateur players against the game of rugby union for concussions. And I would throw that back to you as a question. Is it sensible governance from the RFU to create a system whereby they know what the dangers of this sport are and they just let people sign a waiver because they want to play rugby? I mean, I would suggest that there are a lot of people out there who would say that if the RFU know what the dangers are, they've got to do as much as they possibly can to ensure that those people playing it do not fall foul of them.
And they've been working hard on that with the information programs and the head case and all the rest of it. That's part of the way the game's evolved, that people are much more aware now, particularly around concussion, let alone any other injuries they might be able to receive. There comes a point you can go out now and jump on a motorbike that, you know, you can do ludicrous things on. There's nothing to stop you doing it as long as you've got a license. So you take risks in life and you have a choice. Nobody's forcing the thousands of people to go out and play rugby every weekend. Nobody's forcing them to do it. They want to do it and they understand the risk of the game they're playing on that day. So they're not asking for these changes to be brought in. So at what point do you let them enjoy the game they love?
It's a very nuanced and a very interesting debate. Have you got a response to that, John? I mean, can you see the player's perspective? They're not asking for it. They don't want it. Or has the RFU got to do something almost to protect the players from themselves?
I think that's a difficult balance that you tread, isn't it? You mentioned good governance. And also, we are talking about the players of today. We've also got to think about what the players of the future might want from the sport as well. So you're trying to find you know the next evolution of the game, you know, because I think we'd all accept that some age grade players are choosing not to play the game anymore because of injury and fear of injury, and clearly we want to bring as many young players through into our senior game as possible. But equally, and I do hear what Paul and James say, we don't want to disenfranchise our existing players as well. So we've just got to try and find the right balance. And I appreciate James and Paul have said they don't believe we've found that at the moment, you know, but I understand we've got to listen and we've got to try and find a position that we all feel we can move forward and continue to talk about all the positive stuff that the game brings to people.
Which I think is a very interesting point. I mean, Paul, I'd like to ask you the question, really. I mean, we had a fabulous night down at Aylesbury was it pre-Christmas, wasn't it? Some of the best post-match curry I think I've ever experienced anywhere. So you've got a club that not only is doing the right bits correctly, but you've got 700 players, as you mentioned. I would probably hazard it at the moment, you are probably the exception, not the rule. We're hearing of a number of rugby clubs that are going out of business. Playing numbers have fallen dramatically in the aftermath of COVID. When you look at the broader picture around community rugby at the moment, it seems to be one of decline. Would you accept that? And do you see rugby at the moment is a sport that has to try and do something to get itself trending upwards again? Or do you see a sport that is doing what it needs to in this moment?
It's difficult. It's not a game for everyone. But as we've proved, I think if you get it right, you upskill the right people, you put the right facilities in place, and you make it an inviting place, people come and play rugby. They'll come and play rugby. That's all we're doing. We're not fabulously wealthy. We're just making it the best experience we can for everybody to come along. I think there's a lot more needs to happen in promoting the game. I think losing community coaches all those years ago has not helped the game grow at all. What's the decline down to? Are we all honestly saying it's because people don't want to get injured? Or is it because people aren't being exposed to the game because it's not being played in schools anymore?
Well, people have been leaving the game ever since the game was founded because of their fear of injury and fear of the game. Like, well, it's not
the
like
fear of physicality. Physicality.
You know, they're just not in it. I mean, I've got two daughters. One daughter absolutely loves rugby and she will tackle anything. I've got another daughter who's terrified of tackling. So she goes and does karate instead. Like, that's the game. Like, she's quite happy hitting and punching people, but she don't want to tackle them. Like, that's where we're at. Kids will choose something else. And the issue we've got at the minute is you've got a load of frustrated existing players that are now deciding if they want to keep playing or not.
We've got to where we are now, which seems to be a position we set out last week of what the game was going to go to. Why was it just the council members making the decision on what I believe was a video they watched on the Zoom call? Why have we got to this point where we're only now getting to ask questions? And thanks to John for coming onto this so we can do that. But where is the opportunity for us to get involved in this decision-making process? Because surely we must be.
What I would say is that the council have debated this at length, and they are all involved in the community game and they're in touch with the community game in most cases, Paul. I do think we need to spend more time gathering the views of people like yourself and James in the coming weeks and months when we seek to develop these proposals more fully, you know, and that is our intent now as well. But I also, I do believe that some of the changes that we're talking about in terms of slight lowering of the tackle height, I do think that those changes will make the game safer. Player welfare continues to be a very challenging topic for rugby governing bodies across the globe.
I'm just going to say this now, John. I'm really grateful to you for coming on because this is we were talking before you guys joined us. Actually, this is about the most divisive topic we've had on our show, and I certainly wasn't expecting it a week or so ago. Do you believe you have got the answers to some of the points that are being shouted about all over social media and have been raised tonight? Have you got the answers to the points that are being made so that you can almost get that narrative back, or is this going to have to require really quite a big piece of coming together and working through and explaining it in order to get to, I suppose, the buy-in that you're looking for?
Yeah, I think some of the areas we've discussed tonight, we always knew they would take a little bit of time to refine. So we mentioned the scenario around the tackles on or near the goal line, the pick and go scenarios, etc. So we understood that would take a little bit of time to refine in terms of how that's written into law, and more importantly, how those laws become law guidelines that referees can use and coaches can refer to as well. And then the other area, as I mentioned earlier, one of the reasons why the decision was made so early is we were very keen that it would give time to develop a training package, a support package for the game over the next few months, because as James has mentioned, changing techniques and developing players takes a little bit of time. So we want to give the game as much time as possible to adapt and ready themselves for next season. And there will be some consultation as part of building that support package and obviously delivering that over the spring, summer months and into and beyond next season.
So with that in mind, would it not have made more sense to start at the top of the game where they've got the money and the coaching structures to implement this properly and as it needs to be, rather than the bottom of the game where we'll do our best?
I think one of the challenges, Paul, is that elite competition is it sits under the remit of World Rugby rather than the RFU or the SRU or whoever. So hence the reason why this is at the moment applied to the domestic game in England.
Do you think this will arrive at that level eventually? Because at the minute we've got a situation where which does happen, are under 14s, I think, go and play in Wales on tour. Yeah. Well, that can't happen this year because they play a different game, or next season, maybe one.
So we have been in conversation with the other home unions, and they are discussing what we've been talking about this evening, and we're also aware that World Rugby are considering this from a community game perspective across the globe as well, in terms of a lowering of the tackle height. So we are aware those conversations are happening and have been happening for a while.
Can I just quickly ask you, John? Have you been surprised by, I suppose, the volatility of the reaction to the announcement last week?
Yeah, if I'm honest, a little bit, yeah. Well, then I put myself in the shoes of when I was playing the game. I suspect that I may have reacted the same way initially. And then when I've thought more about it, you know, I've looked at, you know, what's happened over the last 20 years. The tackle heights have gradually got a little bit higher, you know, across all levels of the game. And there's a number of reasons for that in terms of how the tackle and how defences are coached. So, but then I thought, what are the main tackle areas that you would want your players to target if you were coaching them? You'd want them to tackle around the thighs and around the waist in most cases, which, so I can understand the reaction. I hope a little bit of time allows for a little bit, you know, cooler heads and people think about where they were taught to tackle, how they were taught to tackle and how that can be a more common occurrence in the game in the future, you know, those waist high and thigh tackles.
I've got a question. I don't know whether there's going to be an answer to it. And the fact that a discussion that I was having with Alex earlier, why rugby union? Why is rugby league still sticking to what it does? Where all this technique that you're talking about has mainly come from, the likes of Sean Edwards coming in and putting press defences in off the line, get up as fast as you can, which has built that challenge to the race to close the space, which keeps you upright for longer. But yet they're not concerned about it. Game three of Origin, three people went off with head knocks in the first 5 minutes. You know, you still see those massive contacts off first kickoffs. Yet we seem to be the only ones really looking to be doing the right thing and not. And my worry is we haven't identified what we are as a sport and what we are as a brand. Where do we draw that line in the sand of going, the rest of it is the sport. It is attritional. It's more of a question for the ether. Are we changing our game to keep
trying to be all things to all men?
Yeah, are we trying to be all things to all men rather than going, this is what it is to be a rugby player and this is our game. If you want to play it, come and play it. Or if you don't.
We already lose age grade players to rugby league because it's a summer sport. So we'll lose them for parts of the season to go and play rugby league because of the overlap. And I'm just thinking, like, obviously we're in the south, but in the north, those lads that want to go and get that, have that physical contest, it's an easy decision for them to cross the boundary, isn't it?
I don't disagree. Can I ask you then, because I'm conscious we could do this for a lot longer, and I think, honestly, if we can help broker and navigate some of this, would be like an episode of Jerry Springer, I think, trying to bring all the parties together.
We're going to walk away in, James is probably, Bucky and Paul are probably in a better place than what
they thought. That was my question, really. I mean, has this alleviated any of your concerns, James, in any way, shape or form? There is going to be a dialogue. There is going to be a sort of a working party to help you guys do what you've got to do.
There's more to come.
There is more to come. Or do you leave this conversation with very little gained?
I just want to say thanks to John for sticking his head up and taking some shots, really. I feel for you, John, because I feel like you're wearing it for the union. I think there needs to be a step back, and we all want a safe game, but we still want a game of rugby. And I think that's the key.
The same as James has just said, really, the reason the reaction to this has been as it has is because of the way it was delivered. And I say, it's already, what we're hearing is that it's been softened already by the sounds of it to be more palatable. So perhaps we'll get to where we need to get to. But what we were told last week didn't sit well. I was at the club all day Saturday and all night, and it's all we talked about all day long. And because what was sent out the conversations were completely negative. I think there's not one person said, well, hang on, it might make sense to do this. Not one person said that. And then we had a few people down. The reaction is as it is because of the way it was delivered. So perhaps going forward now, we make some ground over the next few days. But it doesn't sound like there's much time to do it.
John, so sort of give us a sort of a sense of what is next. How are you going to get the narrative back on this? And what is the end point that you'd like people to hear from your good self as to why this is being done and where, why this is necessary?
If I start, we've all been around the block a little bit in terms of our rugby lives. So introducing new laws into rugby always comes with a period of transition, and some of those are more accepted than others. I appreciate this is a seismic change, and we can see that from the reaction. I understand that. I also, you know, through my own experience in the game, I recognise that people in the game do come together to try and find a solution that works for the majority as well. And hopefully that can begin to happen now, you know, with the likes of James and Paul and others, we can find a solution that we can all move forward with. And then I guess the final piece for me, I pick up something James says, you know, there's no intention to try and make the game less physical, James. You know, we all of us involved in the game, I admire the physical qualities of the people that play the game and want the game to stay physical. We are just looking at trying to find ways to minimise that concussion risk, especially those that are caused by certain types of tackles and the ones that Tin's just described there. Sometimes the change does take a couple of years. We've got to be patient with this. You know, we've seen that you often get rejection and, shall we say, grudging acceptance in years one and two, and then over time, people become more confident and comfortable with what's been changed, and you know, you move forward again to the next stage, you know, the next evolution of the game.
Sounds a bit like my dating game, that rejection for 2 years and then hopefully it comes on through.
Just two.
Still trying. I tell you what I'm going to do, fellas. This is for you mainly, James and Paul. This actually was feedback from a conversation that the RFU have had with the FFR. So obviously they implemented these laws in 2019. I went through them a bit earlier on. I'm just going to pick out a couple of them. It was a very difficult start, slightly confused by COVID, but after 2 full years of implementation, there is no further discussion on the topic. So in France, these are now bedded in and everyone's accepted them. Also, they've looked at 50 games recently and compared pre and post rates of head impacts, concussion, yellow cards, and they say the numbers are vastly reduced. They are waiting for the quantitative data. And just a final one, in summary, the FFR are 100% satisfied with the initiative. They have reduced injury rates and created a better game with more continuity. Does that leave you with hope, or do you remain sceptical, James?
I need to see it. I need to play it. I'm not following anything on paper.
Okay, fair point.
So if the RFU put those some games that have levels of what is happening in France, would you watch them? And would you like to see what it looks like?
Well, I think that would be a very good idea. I think that's all part of the consultation, isn't it?
There we are, John. Can we get a couple of games and we'll stick them up on goodbadrugby.com and RFU.com and people can come and see what the new regime looks like?
I thought we were going to have a trip over to France for a moment. I thought that was there.
If you're paying, we will. Exactly.
But I think that needs to be supported with clear directives from the RFU. Are we following what they're doing to the letter, or are there mild adaptations? Because it's the interpretation of the laws that has always been the issue with rugby. How much grey area is there going to be?
Let's get this form of the game nailed down then, and what it's going to end up as, because we don't still seem to be entirely sure what we're going to end up with. But let's get to there, and then you're welcome. You can have the pitch at it's the RFUs, but you can have the pitch at Aylesbury, and we'll put a game on and we'll watch how it's reffed and how it's played, see if it's doable or not. But we still don't know what it is.
That's a very good question, actually, John. Why have you not just taken the directives from France and implemented those? Why is there a difference?
I guess we were mindful of the reaction that we might have got if we'd have said that there is in all situations the ball carrier must stay upright. You know, we felt there was enough scope that would allow the ball carrier to brace for contact and still allow a lower tackle area. So that was the first thing. And we also we recognise that the pick and drive is a really, you know, key part of the community game, and we wanted to try and discover if we could maintain that as part of the game. So those were the two main reasons, to be honest with you.
I when I first heard about the upright running, I thought of a drill that Larder did once where you had to run around holding a ball above your head with your ribs fully exposed, and you had Danny Grucott with a free license to maim you.
But when men were men.
Literally five people were crawling off the pitch. So that's what I originally had in my head, in the fact that you're just running completely bolt upright with and just getting filled in left, right and centre.
Stick that in your notebook, John. We'll have that as a directive in 2025, all right? Ball must be carried above head at all times. Listen, I once again, I'm very grateful to you for coming out, and it's not been an easy 72 whatever it is hours for the RFU, so we are very grateful. Can I just ask you, John, do you think we're going to get there with this, or is the state of the noise now and the way the world is this going to have to sort of go through another iteration?
I don't know about iteration. I think it will evolve. I think we will get there. Call me a bit of a romantic. I'm a great believer in the game and the people in the game, and I think, you know, we will come together and find a solution to this and move things forward.
Good. Come together, I think, might be the key words that Paul latches onto. Thank you very much, Steve, for your time. James, what's the big game this weekend? Aylesbury against who, where? What's at stake?
London Cornish.
London Cornish. Nice. How are you tracking overall this season?
Where we sat? Sixth?
Yeah.
Yeah, we had Hammers and Fullers, Hammersmith and Fulham on Saturday, top of the league. We just kicked them a bit too much counter-attack. They were sharp in the back line.
Really?
Yeah, and we were just too tight around the breakdown, mate. We didn't get enough width, so they cut us apart a few times.
Good. And who is player of the season so far? Who gets a shout out?
Oh, mate.
Can't nominate yourself.
No. who are we going for? Oh, Jonty Charlier. He's, mate, the kid. Last week, we were playing OPs, and there's four 50-50 kick chases he's had. He's got no right to any of them, scored all four. So, wow. And he makes his tackles, mate. Can't fault him.
Below the waist, I hope.
And chop.
Post-match curry this week is?
Vicky's biryani. He had his sweet and sour chicken on last week. That's my favourite. It goes down well.
Delicious. Good luck to you for the rest of the season. We had such a great evening with you a few months ago. It's great to see.
It was great. Thank
clubs
you, yeah.
that are doing just the great work that you are. So long may that continue. John, once again, many thanks.
Thank you, John.
I hope they'll give you tomorrow off the back of the fire you've taken today. So we really appreciate your time and your thoughts. And hopefully for everybody's sake, we can find our way back to a middle ground where there are more smiles than frustrations. Gentlemen, thank you very much indeed. Go forth and conquer. Thank you.
Thank you. Cheers, John.
And there they go. Not often we play the role of peacekeepers and negotiators and deal brokers. Have we taken a bit of the sting out of it?
I generally think we have. I think I sit in a better place now than what I did before. I'm slightly confused how it's got to the point where they've just dropped the bomb without, you know, what Paul and Bucky said, without really any consultation and any explanation. Yeah, you know, I took heart out the fact that Bucky said that they had looked at a game and there were only two incidents. So it means that it's not...
Two incidents which under the new directives
would have been penalties.
Yeah.
So it's not a massive landscape change by the sounds of things now.
Yeah.
It's sort of what we were talking about before. I didn't think it was going to be a massive. It seems to be like it's almost what's happening in the professional game. Let's just put it in the community game. Let's solve the but it's not actually an issue, which I think it was a lot of the angst and the fire that was coming out of social media yesterday was the fact that it wasn't needed.
Yeah. Either John has played about the greatest game of bluff I've ever seen, or inadvertently, I think the RFU, by napalming the situation and then working back, adding in the nuance, etc., I think that is actually a more effective way of getting what they want out of it than trying to get people to edge their tackle heights down. Because everything now feels like a win for the community game, whereas the community game will grumble and moan as it's gently tapered away. So I'd be very interested to see where it all nets out. I think we should offer to the RFU, we could do a live webinar and they can bring whoever they want from the RFU. We'll get as many people in from the community game. We'll make it a sort of a news night.
Bill, check your inbox.
Bill, email incoming. A couple of bits before we go. Thank you once again, particularly to John for coming. Always, James speaks very well, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Should be our community agent, actually. And thank you to Paul. We did have a very good time at Aylesbury. So it is great to see good clubs doing good things. Merch on the website for the super fans. Still boxes of that going. So dive on and snap up whatever you feel like in the cold weather. We had a very good day with Honda this week. What on earth did Hask come as?
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure what he came at. It was like he still thought he was an MMA fighter and he could roll around in a fully grey trackie with interesting trainers.
Working with a blue chip, high profile rugby brand, and he turned up looking like P Donkey or something like that. It was a very disappointing shot selection. In that
but regard. Then refused to do some things because he might get dirty and he wanted to wear it on the plane the next day to go ski DJing.
We had a lot of fun doing that, actually, and we have debriefed in more detail about some fairly entertaining events. That's on this week's Lock-In, wherever you get your Apple subscriptions. That doesn't make sense, but you know what I mean. On this week's Lock-In, do tap into Apple for that. If you'd like it, it's just there for those who love what we do and fancy a little bit extra. Otherwise, you get what you get through the normal channels. Meanwhile, do tune in next week as well, because we are launching an exciting new prediction game ahead of the Six Nations, where you can take on Hask, Tins and myself, probably Ben Kayser and a few others too. John Fox will get involved. More details to follow on that. Big prizes up for grabs. You know, Hask won it last year. Pin the tail on the donkey every
by
so
mistake.
Often it gets right.
By mistake. Yeah, I think he just drew it. I think he got Bertie to do it, didn't he? So.
Oh, did he? Oh, yes. Well, no, but we did one of those before.
Yeah. No, I'm looking forward to it. I'm going to put a lot of time into it this year. I'm quite excited about the Six Nations, but I'm sure we'll get into that next week.
On next week's show. This week's show has been produced by Connor Hewitt. Thanks to you, Connor. Good, the Bad and the Rugby is a Folding Pocket production. Lively one this week. Please be nice to each other in the comments section. More to follow for sure. We will see you next week, though, for a Six Nations preview. Until then, bye for now.
You've been listening to The Good, Yay, The Bad, and The Rugby, Oof, with Alex Payne, James Haskell, and Mike Tyndall. Thanks for listening.